sex and happiness.
Both enrich our lives, change our lives in ways that make life worth living. Yet it's surprising how few people can honestly say that they enjoy regular and fulfilling sex or describe themselves and their lives as happy. Want you to make me feel like I'm the only girl in the world, like I'm the only one that you'll ever love. Host Lori Handlers helps you to explore, learn about, and most importantly, have great sex. And in the process, she helps you to experience real intimacy and happiness.
Sex and happiness.
You'll laugh a little, learn a little, and we hope put a smile on your face and a smile in your life. Now here's Lori.
Hi, everybody. This is Lori Handlers, and you're listening to Sex and Happiness, a show about sex and happiness. And hopefully this is adding to yours. And today, I want you to consider what about you is sensual. What do you love that's sensual? What do you like that's sensual? How would you define sensuality? Because, you know, a lot of people think that sex, full-on sex, is sensuality. And today, I'm here to talk to you with a guest who's an expert in sensuality, and we're going to talk about the differences between that and also some news and upcoming things that are happening for her. So listen up if you're not sure what sensuality is as defined and distinct from your sexuality, and you just may learn something. You may learn how to expand yourself in a whole new way. Before we get started, I want to let you know that this part of the show is brought to you by Zestra, a female enhancement product, which you'll be hearing more about a little later in the show. So my guest today is an expert. Her name is Monica Day, and she's the founder of The Sensual Life. She's an artist, a writer, performer. She's a workshop leader and a personal coach, and she specializes in creating safe spaces for people to explore, experience, and express their sensuality, whatever that is. I left you with a question of what it is. Monica's the creator and host and curator of the open mic series in New York City called Essentiality, an evening of erotic expression, and a frequent reader performer at Philadelphia's Erotic Literary Salon. Monica wrote, performed, and produced the play Song of the Sacred Whore in 2011 for the Philadelphia Fringe Festival, and she's co-producing The Secret Order of the Libertines, an intimate revolution for the 2012 Philadelphia Fringe Festival. In case you're not sure what that is, that's a very big festival in Philadelphia where all kinds of talent gets shown and screened. Other people that both Monica and I know have been in the Philly Fringe Festival, like comedians, etc. And so it's a pretty big honor to appear in that. Welcome to the show, Monica.
Hi, Lori. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, I'm really glad to have you. I specifically called you about a situation you were having. I saw a posting that you had on Facebook, and I said, I'm responding to that.
Yes.
So we'll leave people hanging for a minute about that situation. And first, we'll talk a little bit about how you got involved in sensuality. And really, if you could begin with how you would define sensuality, that would be fantastic.
Yes, absolutely. And it is a big part of what I do is even just defining it, which I think is so interesting. So I define sensuality as being based in our physical sensations. So, you know, starting with your five senses, what you can see and feel on your skin and what you can hear and what you smell, all of these make up our sensual experiences. So really, we're having a sensual experience in every single moment of our day. And
if we're paying attention, well, we are, but we're not always paying attention.
That's the really big thing. If we pay attention to what we are experiencing with our senses, it's one of the best ways I know to keep us in the present moment. But most of us, all of our sensual experiences are moderated by our mind, right? So, you know, you hear a song, for example, and you have some kind of a reaction to that song, but then immediately the mind maybe goes back to when you heard that song play before and a lover you had, and, oh, that was our song. I mean, that's just one example, right? But we're more in the business of making up stories and storylines about our life, which all happens in our mind. And we skip over just this very simple, pure, moment-to-moment experience of being in a body, on the planet, in a body. And so a lot of what I do, and sexuality is part of that. I talk about sexuality as being part of the continuum of sensuality. I mean, because obviously sex is a sensual experience. It's a pretty heightened sensual experience. But it's like people go from 0 to 60. You know, they sort of see themselves almost as heads being transported around by something. Who knows what's down there getting me from one meeting to another, you know. And then all of a sudden they go into a sexual experience, which is this very heightened experience. And one of the things I work with people to do is become more aware of this whole continuum. And when people can be aware of the sensual part of their lives, which is, like I said, every minute, I find that they can be more in the present, more aware of every single moment of their lives.
This is good. So it really is exactly the word sensual is senses. It's exactly what you're saying. And that's all people need to know. It's a pretty simple definition, but then it gets all complicated, according to what you're saying, by what people think about it and how they interpret things and all that kind of stuff.
Right. I mean, we live in this really interesting age where we have so many euphemisms for everything. And so one of the things we don't do is we don't talk very directly about our sensuality, about our sexuality. I think, you know, the situation we're going to talk about in a few minutes, that's one of the things that came up. I mean, it's funny, if you think about it, we now use the word escort, for example. Well, what was an escort, you know, at one time? An escort was just that. It was someone who would accompany you to something. So now when we say the word escort, it has this whole underground meaning that it could be someone who's taking money for sex, for example. So we've lost the original meaning of what an escort means, and it has this whole underground meaning. And where that becomes complicated is that we aren't having direct conversations about our sensual or our sexual lives in ways where we can clearly communicate what it is, what we want, and what we're doing, because we have this whole other sort of second euphemistic language about it. And I think that it's one of the challenges that we have in general about both sexuality and sensuality is that we have no way of really talking about it or communicating it clearly with another person.
I see what you're saying, yeah. I mean, somebody just asked me, just on the same subject, someone just asked me to define erotica or erotic. And I, because I'm part of a film festival, the Erotic Coast Film Festival, and that has to be distinguished from, say, pornography.
And, you know, art, how do you distinguish art from pornography? And some of things get very challenging.
Exactly. Well, I said it was more like fine art. And something that leaves you filling in your own story. What I said there was, it shows you things that arouse and excite you in erotic expression, but don't take you to the finish line. You fill in your own fantasy, your own story, your own imagination of what has happened based on either the images or the description in the book or what have you, and I feel like your work is very much the same. It's sensual, and you're not taking people to a sexual finish line.
No, and actually that was really big part of what I'm now doing. What I realized is that if you look at the way the culture deals with these things, we're either selling sex or we're repressing it. There's not a lot that's in between. And I think that this dichotomy is becoming more and more prevalent in our culture, in our political conversations, in our religious consciousness. We're becoming torn apart in a lot of ways about issue. And one of the things that I realized in my work, and I've been doing this for the last 6 years more intensively and in a more focused way, one of the things I noticed is that when we're being sold on who we're supposed to be, I was looking at Cosmopolitan magazine yesterday, and the whole all about, you know, so about how it was naughty and hidden and secret. There's no place where people get to have a voice about who they are. They're being told who they are. They're being told who it's okay to be, who it's not okay to be. And so what I really wanted to do is provide the space where people get to explore for themselves this really essential part of their lives. And I look at it as, you know, you breathe, you eat, and you have sensual and sexual experiences. Like, it's that primal.
Yeah, sure.
You know?
Yeah, I do. That's great.
Breathing, we do it with food a little bit, actually. We have a lot of behaviors that are underground around food, and I think that's why so many people have issues with food, right? We have shame, and we have emotional eating, right? And because I've studied with you, you know, a conscious way that people just breathe, right? But then there's this whole other place that we can go to with breathing when we're using it in a more conscious way. So I think that that's really true of sensuality and sexuality, is that we can do it in really unconscious ways, or we can raise our level of consciousness and really expand this primal part of our lives so that it really fills and nourishes us in a whole other way.
I agree. I really agree. Well, actually, we're going to take a break there for a minute. When we come back, I want you to tell people how they can start to tune into their sensuality, and also about some events that you run, and then we'll talk about this news flash that we're going to talk about in terms of somebody trying to censor you. So we'll be right back. When we come back, I'll be speaking again with Monica Day, who's the founder of The Sensual Life. She's an artist and a writer and a performer and a workshop leader, and she's telling us about sensuality and our sensualness, and I'm sure you can see how knowing more about your senses and experiencing them, rather than just evaluating and judging everything, will certainly add to your happiness and will increase your own experience of sexuality. So we'll be right back with Sex and Happiness.
Are you wondering what book to read to jumpstart your life, get the best from relationships, attain the deepest feelings of intimacy? Do you want the best sex along with great happiness? Get your copy of Sex and Happiness, The Tantric Laws of Intimacy by Lori Handlers right now. You'll learn how to make love in the unknown, take the performance anxiety and reaching a goal out of sex. You'll learn subtle ways of communication and really important practices to empower you when dealing with an intimate partner. You'll let go of blame and struggle. Doesn't this sound great? Sex and Happiness puts the innocence back into sex and gives Tantra the respect it deserves. Take charge of your life, physically, emotionally, and spiritually with Sex and Happiness by Lori Handlers, only $19.99 paperback and $14.99 ebook. Order your copy today by going to butterflyworkshops.com. That's butterflyworkshops.com for your copy of Sex and Happiness.
We're back, and I'm Lori Handler as your host, and today I'm speaking with Monica Day, and she's the creator, host, and curator of the Open Mic Series in New York City called Essentiality, an evening of erotic expression. And I just want to let you know that I've been to Monica's Open Mic Night in New York City more than once, and I've had a wonderful time. And some people that I know and love have actually performed, including Monica, at her sensual open mic night, and it's been amazing. And if you're in New York City, at some point you might want to check it out. We'll find out how to get in touch with her soon. Monica, when we left off, we were talking about how people could just tune in to what's an essential part of their life. And I love that you've named your work Essentiality, because it's essential, it is. Couldn't agree with you more. So how could people start to expand theirs. Let's say they're not in New York City or Philadelphia, and they don't know, you know, there's no open mic night where they can read erotic poetry, or how can they increase their sensuality?
Yeah. Well, a few things. I'm actually beginning to take my workshop, which is called The Essential Experience, and go around the country with that. So I'm now actively looking for co-producers who want to bring this experience to their area. So I would love to hear from people who are excited about that and who would want to do this.
I'm actually starting to travel around the country with my workshop called The Essential Experience. And I'm actively looking for co-producers who want to bring it to their area. I have at the moment Charlottesville, Virginia, I believe it is, and also Maui, Hawaii, which I'm very excited about.
Nice.
I'm looking for anybody who says, yes, I want to bring it. I mean, all you have to do is get about 10 to 15 people together for a weekend, and I will bring the experience to you. And I'm also developing some online courses because I do realize it can be a challenge and people want to bring this into their lives and into their own home. So I'm going to be developing that this fall.
But if they're not even in any of those places, what can they do? How can they start to notice their senses or their sensuality? Like from you. I mean, certainly I can give some ideas, but what would be one that someone just discovered, they are a sensual, sentient being. What could they do to experience their senses?
Well, one of the most powerful things that I found, and I built my workshop around it, and it grew out of the show, The Sensuality, is I found that creative expression is one of the most powerful ways to start to increase your awareness. So, for example, writing. And you can do that from anywhere. You can go to a cafe and you can just start noticing people around you. Sit and describe your first sip of coffee in the morning in writing. Anytime you slow down an experience and you use something like writing or drawing, you start more aware of it. And also movement, putting on some music and dancing. I use movement, I use improv, writing. I use all of these in my workshop. And I just find that when we engage our senses more creatively, we're able to bypass our filter. You know, we all have these filters, these things where we feel silly or we feel self-conscious, all of these things that have us saying no to experiences in our life. I find that when we use creativity, we can get ourselves to yes a little bit more quickly and easily.
All right, that's good. So people could just start to really write about their experience or move in an experiential way. It's great. It's really great. I tell people to just put on good music as soon as they wake up in the morning and start shaking.
Exactly.
Just shake themselves and then see what happens.
Yeah.
They'll shake out some ideas. They'll shake off some fear.
Exactly.
Like that.
And also, you know, be thoughtful about the music you use. You don't use those songs that, I mean, we all have our little breakup songs. My kids always know when I put on a certain song by Amy Winehouse that I'm having trouble in a relationship because it's my breakup song. Engaging in my story about what's happening in that moment. One of the first things that I get people to is to try to remove the judgment. And I don't even just mean the heavy-handed judgment, like condemning somebody or something. For example, you know, we very quickly would say to someone, oh, you have beautiful eyes, but it doesn't actually give me an experience of you noticing my eyes. But if someone looks in my eyes and they say, oh, your eyes are a very deep green, and in the center, there's a ring of blue around your pupil, and as I'm describing your eye to you, I notice your pupil is getting larger and larger. Okay, no judgment language in it, and it gives me, as the person who this is being described to me, I feel really seen. I mean, my pulse starts to go up, I get a little turned on, I might feel a little shy or something like that, but I'm really having an experience of someone seeing me in a way that when they just say, you have beautiful eyes, I don't really feel that in the same way. Does that make sense?
Mm. Yeah, that's good. That's a really clear example of just giving a description without any evaluation, just saying this is this and this is this, and then you actually can feel it as they speak to you. So that's great. It's really great.
I think that's what most of us don't realize, is how much we aren't actually feeling physical sensations, but we're describing them, or we're experiencing them secondhand through our minds. Like, most of us won't allow ourselves to feel something until our mind tells us it's good or bad. And then if your mind says it's good, you might let yourself feel it. And if your mind tells you no, it's bad, then you either feel it through a veil of shame or wrong, or you don't let yourself feel it at all.
Listen, it's so good to point that out. And it reminds me of my father, who he just turned 90. And he, for years, I mean, at least 10 years, I would say to him around noontime, "Are you hungry? Are you hungry? Do you want food? Would you like to eat?" And he would say, "No, I'm not hungry." Then a second later, he would look at his watch. He would see that it was noon, and he'd say, "Oh, yes, I'm hungry."
Right. That's a great example, right? It's like, it's so interesting. That's how disconnected so many of us are from our body. Like, we don't even know if we're hungry until we have some outside stimulus telling us.
Exactly.
Yep. Exactly. Right.
So tell us a little bit about this thing. I contacted you recently because I read on Facebook that you were trying to fund some project.
Yes.
Through Kickstarter, I guess it's called, and you were being censored. And I mean, I'd like to talk about it. I don't think that you talking about it on the show will hamper your chances if anything has changed, but it would be nice to know, like, what kind of response you got in the today's world of, it seems like everything goes, but some things are being censored once again, like freedom of speech or whatever.
Yeah, it was fascinating. It's still fascinating. It's kind of still unfolding. You know, I've been self-producing shows and theatrical experiences for a while, and they almost always lose money. That's not where I make my money. And I noticed that artists in particular were having success, and in fact that other fringe shows were using Kickstarter, and I thought, you know, okay, I'm going to try this. And so I'm producing a show called The Secret Order of the Libertines, An Intimate Revolution, for the Philadelphia Fringe Festival, which is coming up in September. And I put together a little video and I described it, and I immediately got back a response that said it was rejected, and that it violated Amazon's, because they're part of Amazon, it violated their sexually explicit in material and content. Now, what's so interesting about this, Lori, is that I started to really wonder what was the definition of explicit. Right? Because of most of what I talk about is, and you've already heard me say what I do, you know, I have people write about their experiences, and some of what people will do in this show is they'll have one-on-one reading. So rather than someone reading up on a stage, they will have someone reading to them one-on-one, which is a very intimate experience. And they may not even be reading about anything sensual or sexual. It's just the intimacy is from just being read to one-on-one versus in a whole group, right? And then the other thing
Wait a minute. Let me try to understand this before you go into the other thing. You're saying that this show that you're putting together for the Fringe Festival, rather than one person reading to an audience from the stage in a sensual manner or an intimate manner, you're going to have different people reading to different people down by their seats, wherever they're sitting. Like, that's intimate. That's
right. In fact, it's called the poetry brothel. And you actually give a few dollars to a poetry whore who reads her or his poetry to you one-on-one. And it's a very playful way of making a statement that art and literature deserves to be compensated, and that this can be a very intimate act.
I love it.
Yes.
I love it. I think it's so brilliant. And, so go ahead.
Poetry Brothel exists. It actually exists in several cities, and this show is introducing the Poetry Brothel to the Philadelphia area. I'm co-producing this with them. And interestingly, they've been supported by Kickstarter in the past. And then I have graduates from my workshop, The Essential Experience, who have been really working on not only on creating these experiences artistically and delivering them in a performance. And so I'll have some of them, and then I have a musical group. So as you can tell, I mean, there's no nudity, which is interesting because there's a show involved in The Fringe that is like completely nude, and that's fine with everyone. There's no nudity. There's nothing sexually, any kind of act being done. So I really had to start to question what was it that they were objecting to. So I did engage in a process of appealing their ruling. And when I finally, after going back and forth with them a few times, I finally said to them, you're really going to have to tell me what you find explicit about this. Then what was so interesting is that just yesterday, they just informed me yesterday that, oh, upon further reflection, they've approved it, just as is. And what I think is interesting about this, and I do really still want to talk to them further because I really don't, you know, understand on a certain level, but I feel as though a couple things happened. I feel as though they probably just heard any of the words, like you're saying, they hear the words erotic, sensual, and they made assumptions about what that meant, and it was just...
Exactly.
Just no.
Well, they probably might even have some kind of a word checker. You know, there are things on websites where you write the word whatever, dick, or whatever, it picks it up and it says, oh, there's explicit language here.
Exactly. And, you know, then I started making the point to them. I said, well, it's interesting because Amazon sells porn, and Amazon made a fortune on 50 Shades of Grey, which is a lot more explicit than what I'm doing. So, but it did take me three times, and I had to point out very clearly what we were doing and all of this. And then I thought it was very interesting that they then didn't need me to change anything, and they said yes. And of course, I'm not sure if they saw my blog post about it and if they knew that I was making a bit of a fuss or if they just finally put their attention on it. But I think that the bigger issue about this is how I think we have so much fear and shame in our culture, and we have so much uncertainty about sexuality and sensuality that it would elicit this immediate no, this knee-jerk reaction of no. I think that's still a story, and I think it's still something that I'm kind of still sitting with and deciding, you know, what does that mean exactly?
I think it's a subject for you to do a play about or create an art form about. I mean, I think it's just as valid and important to point out, but to point out in a creative way, which I'm sure you can do.
Well, that's what I started to really feel about this. If anything, it made me, you know, something similar happened last year when I decided to seek regular employment. I've been self-employed for over 10 years, and I thought that a paycheck would be a new experience for me. And I got a job. I landed this incredible job. I was going to be director of corporate sales. I was going to make $150,000 a year. And then they found out just the title of both my company and my play, because I don't change my name when I do this. I do it all under the same name because I have nothing to be ashamed of. And they rescinded the job. I mean, it just, the job offer got taken away.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Ouch.
Very ouch. And I was told by the headhunter that as much as they personally think what I'm doing is great, they had to tell me from a professional standpoint that unless I took everything off the internet that related me with sexuality or sensuality in any way, that I was unemployable at the level at which I am qualified. Mm. And that was a huge blow, and I had also just lost my father at the same time, and I didn't really do anything with that or about that. But I think that when this came up again this year and something that felt so similar, and I thought, I just felt it in such a deep place this year. I mean, I was angry, but I also just felt like there's something wrong. There's something deeply wrong culturally that this is happening. It's not something that's just happening to me.
No, not at all. It's happening to many, many people. Sometimes when I go to consult, you know, because I still do consulting work for government, I mean, sometimes I have to just tell them when I go on the interview, by the way, if you start Googling me, you're going to find a lot of stuff about sexuality, sacred sexuality, etc. And I tell them up front so that when they're looking, they have all my credentials, they have every single thing, and if it makes them uptight, they have to know that in advance. And so that's the way I handle it.
And that fear of the job, they had government contracts, and they were afraid of losing them, even though I was going to be the corporate sales director. So what I've really come to, I think I had to walk through, my own process has been that I had a tremendous amount of work to do to walk through whatever my own internalized shame was. And that has been a huge journey, and that's a lot of what my show was about last year. So I really feel like this year, when this happened again, something within me got fortified that I was really ready to not only do the work I'm doing with people, which is very important work, but also to start to really put a voice to this and to really be willing to stand up and to be known and visible as someone who's saying, we need to change our conversation about sex.
Great, Monica. It's really great. And sensuality, yeah. Well, we're going to have to close on this note, but I think we're ending on a very important message and a very high note. I trust that the people who listen to my show are in favor and in support of you. We're not reaching probably too many of the ears that really need to change the way they speak and think about sexuality and sensuality. But that doesn't matter. The people listening, some of them are activists, and they will continue to keep in mind what we're talking about here. It's very important, very, very critical.
Yeah.
So thank you so much, Monica Day. It's been wonderful having you. How do we get in touch with you so that people can find your work, invite you to produce your workshops and to do erotic open mic nights in their city? How do they get you?
Yes, I have a website, which is thesensuallife.com with no spaces or anything. And you can reach me there. You can contact me via email. You can see all the descriptions of my work. And please do reach out, and especially those who are also involved in this. I think that this really needs to be a movement, and it needs to be a lot of voices. So I hope people will get in touch.
Please keep me posted on what happens with Kickstarter and all of it. I really do want to know. Thank you.
Thank you, Lori.
Everyone stay tuned. My next guest is going to be talking to us about also her latest project. So we'll be right back with Sex and Happiness.
My question for people right now is, if you're a woman who could use a little zest and zing in your arousal response, or maybe you know women or a woman who could use this, because many women say that their feelings of desire, arousal, and sexual satisfaction don't happen as naturally or as often as they'd like. So I want to tell you about Zestra, because Zestra was developed to meet this much-needed option for women. Zestra is safe and a patented blend of botanical oils and extracts, and it's created to help women have increased sexual sensations. Zestra comes in convenient single-dose personal packets. Each packet keeps the essential arousal oils and extracts free, fresh, and safe from light. And with application of Zestra, it starts to work within 3 to 5 minutes. And at about 10 minutes, there's something called the Zestra Rush. And that can last up to about 45 minutes. The great news is that Zestra can be used as frequently as you like during each sexual experience. Now, I'm somebody who believes that all women deserve sexual satisfaction. That's why I do this show, in case you hadn't noticed. So I believe that men and women deserve sexual satisfaction. So if you're a woman who isn't getting that kind of arousal response that you want, please call 877-426-8047. That's 877-426-8047. And please remember to say you heard about Zestra from Lori Handlers on the Sex and Happiness Show.
Well, we're back with Sex and Happiness, and this is the second half of the program, and I told you that this half of the program would be a treat for you, having to do with relationships, and I mean that. I hope it'll be a treat anyway. We want to look at this question. If you're in a relationship where you find there's some kind of power dynamics or power struggle even, I don't know whether I really want to call it a struggle, sometimes people find in relationships that they get dominated. They want to be loved and adored so much that they almost give themselves over to being dominated or possessed by the other person. Sometimes people just gravitate towards someone who's more powerful than them or someone who's weaker than them, and a dynamic gets established. And it happens in almost every relationship. It's happened to you. It's not uncommon. My guest today is going to talk about it, though. She is an expert in empathy within relationships, like how people can either choose to play their power dynamic and then put it down when they're not playing and relate to each other equally, or what to do. That's what I imagine she's going to be talking to us about. Her name is Chris Ellen, and she's of the Couples Libido Solution. And Chris Ellen specializes in couples challenges, their libido challenges. And if, in case you don't, I'm sorry if you don't know what libido means, but libido is your sex drive, your sexual feelings, your turn on. It's like how turned on you are to somebody. She offers compassionate and practical solutions to dedicated partnerships in trouble. So I don't know if you're listening today and you're in trouble, listen up. She is dedicated to helping couples reconnect, rekindle, and reinvigorate their relationships. And you can learn more about her by going to CouplesLibidoSolutions.com. And we'll announce that again a little later in the show. So welcome to the Sex and Happiness Show, Chris Ellen.
Thank you, Lori.
I don't know how my intro was for you. That's what I imagined we'd be talking about, like people in trouble because they can't get themselves equalized, or they can't figure out like who's in charge or what have you. So tell us a little bit about that. What are we really talking about here when we say this winning or losing power dynamic?
What I really wanted to talk about today was if you're in that place of feeling that you can't express or you can't connect with your partner, how you can get back into touch first with yourself and then with your partner so that you can have more connection with your partner.
Okay, so this is good. I'm glad you said this and clarified, because it's true. I think people gravitate towards, they're attracted to sometimes what they don't have in a relationship. But I mean, I'm just trying to look at it myself personally. I mean, I'm a really powerful person, and I have found that I've created partners sometimes who compete with me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a drag. And I'm not exactly a person who submits.
Mm-hmm.
I know what I like, whether it's style or what music or whatever. I'm pretty opinionated, and I'm not set in my ways. I'm really open, but I know my preferences and I know my boundaries. So for me, it's like I'm saying, okay, so how does someone lose it in the first place and then getting back to it? So could you speak just a little bit more about the concept of losing your power?
Mm-hmm.
Or giving your power away, or because I think it used to happen to women solely. You know, most of the time it happened to women. And now I feel in the culture, since in the post-feminism years, I think men are becoming powerless in a certain way. So I don't know what that all adds up to in couples, but I do know what the statistics of divorce are, and I do know how many people are exploring some other form of sexuality these days in an open way that's in droves,
mm-hmm.
because there's something off in the way people are relating. So how do people lose it?
That's a great question. And I would really like to bring that, instead of how do they lose their power, a different way of framing it is, where is their empowerment? Where is their internal empowerment? Has it become quiet? Has it become, is there some conflict within themselves or their relationship, which is creating dis-ease for their own empowerment and for the empowerment of how they're interacting with their relationship?
Okay, that's great. I appreciate that. It's much healthier.
So there's a lot of different ways that we can get separated from our empowerment. And especially with empathy, when we're in conflict with our beloved, when we have some ongoing conflict, which is feels weighting us down a bit, sometimes what can happen is we can turn off or shut off our empathy with the other person, with the connection between the two partnerships, to sort of nest and settle and come back into our empowered self. But in that disconnection from our partner, we don't have that ongoing dialogue. We withdraw, we become quiet, and we lose that place of being able to be empathically empowered within the relationship. So one reason might be there's conflict, either overt or some subtle conflict in the relationship.
Hmm. And can you define empathy? Because some people, I'm just going to say, some people think that empathy is sympathy. So could you give us a working definition of empathy?
Sure thing. The way that I'm using empathy in this context is to be able to feel another's feelings, to be able to be present with the feelings of another person as they are of your own.
Okay, great. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. Yeah. So, okay, so it's going into a quiet place and coming back to being able to feel them as one once could feel them is the assumption that, you know, they got together for a reason.
Right. Oftentimes in the newness of a relationship, oftentimes we're very connected with our partners. There's a time of romantic blossoming where we're very connected with the feelings and the preferences and the tastes. And sometimes that can fade with time. And sometimes there can be a specific moment in the relationship that causes us to step back.
Yeah, and that, I mean, I'm just thinking that sometimes people find themselves in this unravelment and they just kind of, they don't notice it.
Mm-hmm.
They're going along in a love, everything's hunky-dory, and then they wake up one day and they just can't stand that person eating and talking with
yes.
food in their mouth.
Yeah, there's an intense frustration or the anxiousness of like, who is this person? And that's when you notice, going back to your empowerment, that's when you notice that the power dynamics have shifted. Perhaps when you were just in a new relationship, you were getting to know them and everything is very rosy. And then there's this moment of like, who is this person?
My head's going wild now because I have all kinds of theories about it. And sometimes I feel that people only show their best part in the first 90 days to 180 days, and then all of a sudden their dark side starts coming out as they trust more or as they let down their barriers. And the other thing just is that I think when people smell those, feel those pheromones and those oxytocins and everything running through their brain, they're on a high.
Mm-hmm.
Like they've been drinking or smoking, and then it wears off. And then they go, oh, I didn't notice that about this person before.
Definitely. The physical body has its own cycles. And when we're talking about emotions and empathy, emotions are of the body. So sometimes those chemicals and those endorphins can create a rosier picture, and then sort of when the relationship changes and you start to notice like, oh, they snore at night and that really causes me frustration because I can't get to sleep. And so you feel your own emotions, sort of the frustration and feeling anxious and disconnected, and those really vulnerable places, if you don't have the tools to address how to reconnect with your partner, there might be a feeling of separation and adding to your anxiety.
Yeah, I think this is really good. I think it's really good to address because I know there are lots of people who want to stay together for the right reason,
mm-hmm.
but there is such a push to separate. It seems like there's so much evidence in the world to separate out and not hang in there. So I like this whole notion that you have of empathy, and we're going to take a short break here, but when we come back, I'm going to ask you about how people really do reconnect, some tools that you teach people, and even if you might have a to-go thing, but like a tip that people could take away with them today, if they're in such a relationship or if they're going to get in such a relationship, what could they do to reconnect proactively so that they don't have to find themselves in a rut with the only choice to leave. Okay, so I'm talking with Chris Ellen, who is from CouplesLibidoSolutions.com, and she's going to give you a few solutions when we come right back. This is Sex and Happiness. I'm Laurie Hamlisch. Please stay tuned.
Many times on Sex and Happiness, you've heard Laurie talk about emotional release and how important it is. Well, now you can do emotional release in the privacy of your own home. In Laurie's CD, Shamanic Release and Lottie Hahn, she creates a safe and sacred space in which you can do the powerful work Laurie is known for in her sacred sexuality courses. Laurie sets you up with the proper positioning and breathing. Then she guides you through each emotional state to the beat of tribal African rhythms. This CD provides an easy way to do emotional clearing work on a regular basis. Order your copy of Shamanic Release and Lottie Hahn today and watch your relationships walk free of emotional baggage. To order the Shamanic Release and Lottie Hahn CD by Laurie Handlers, go to www.butterflyworkshops.com right now.
Hey all, want to have a real adventure this year? I, Laurie Handlers, personally invite you to come with me on a tantric tour of the heart of India from November 19th to December 1st, 2012. You'll see the Taj Mahal and visit the fabulous Fatehpur Sikri, home of the great Mughal king Akbar. You'll experience the sacred lake of Pushkar and visit the pink city of Jaipur. Then at dawn, from a boat on the Ganges in Varanasi, you'll see exquisite Hindu prayer rituals. Then you'll see Sarnath, where the Buddha gave his first speech after attaining enlightenment as well. And then you'll explore the exotic Kama Sutra temples in Khajuraho. You'll have ample opportunity to see these world-renowned temples up close, and you'll even get to meditate inside. Finally, you'll shop till you drop in the Paragonj Bazaar in New Delhi. Throughout the tour, I'll be teaching tantric techniques and principles, and I promise that you will shift your consciousness and come closer to attaining your spiritual goals. For more information about the tantric tour to the heart of India, call me at 202-686-7440. That's 202-686-7440. Or write to me, Laurie, at butterflyworkshops.com. You can find out everything you want to know at butterflyworkshops.com, Tantric Tours. Please note that no previous experience of Tantra or yoga is necessary. I invite you to join me in this unique experience touring the incredible country of India, and I must warn you, this is not your typical tour, and you are not a typical tourist.
You're listening to Sex and Happiness, and I'm Laurie Handlers, and we're back now from the break, and I'm speaking with Chris Ellen, who specializes in couples' libido challenges, and that what that would mean is that people are turned off to each other. And Chris Ellen is saying that what's needed is empathy. So, Chris Ellen, how do people go about having empathy? Give us some examples of people you've worked with or tips and ideas that you might have so people can get a real sense of it here.
Well, empathy is really, I've worked with clients who have, one perhaps had an ill partner. One of the partners was very seriously had an illness, and in their desire to connect with their partner and to understand what they were feeling, so they would ask and really get deep into the emotional of, like, beloved, how are you feeling? I'm imagining that you're very frustrated and not being able to connect with me in the ways that we have in the past. And that dialogue brings about the need, the universal human need of being seen, of being met, of being heard, of being in companionship. So one of the really important things to be able to do when you are noticing, first of all, are you in connection, and ask that question of your partnership. How am I feeling within my partnership? Do I feel connected? Do I feel present to my partner and beloved emotional state? And depending on that answer, there's a couple of questions you can ask yourself. One is checking in for conflicts within the relationship. Where are we disconnected? Where am I holding frustration? Where am I holding anger? And checking in first and foremost with yourself. How am I feeling? What are my needs that are being met or not being met? And I know in my own life, when I have my needs met, when I have my needs for companionship met, when I have my needs for empathy met, I feel so held. So are you feeling held within yourself? Or are you feeling disconnected? So that is a really great place to start, Lori, is really check in with yourself and feel and get a sense for what are you feeling and what are your personal needs.
And even in a case of illness, where somebody might have cancer, your partner might have cancer, something horrible. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just want to take it to the nth degree here, since you did bring it up.
Mm-hmm.
Even in a case like this, it's not selfish for the other partner, the caregiver partner, the well partner, to look to see how they're doing. I mean, some mm-hmm. people just lose themselves, mm-hmm. and then both people are going down. So
yeah.
I think what you're saying here is really important.
And you were talking about power dynamics earlier, and when there's an illness or a tragedy or a big challenge in a relationship, sometimes the power dynamics can shift, and you get to reset and become, you take care of what needs to be taken care of, but you really need to make sure you're nurturing yourself as a caregiver.
Yeah, that's so important. I was just trying to kind of like play into it myself in terms of what happens, and I know I've been a caregiver. What I hate is when I'm a caregiver to somebody who knows they have a condition and I don't know I'm stepping into it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't say yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where somebody's all of a sudden, I've even had people say to me, you know, they're going to care for me, and then they end up being so needy.
Mm-hmm.
I feel set up. And I imagine that those are normal feelings that people might have as well. I mean, there's lots of dynamics
mm-hmm.
where people just, where there's things happening and people aren't aware, or they don't say, or what have you, and it makes it so uncomfortable. I think people turn off. Again, I think sometimes people turn off unconsciously and they wake up one day and they go, I don't know how I got here, but I can't stand you anymore. Or I can't stand doing this anymore. I'm not taking care of myself. I'm drained.
Yes. Disconnection and removing yourself is something that happens often. And one thing that can be so powerful is coming down into your heart and bringing your awareness down into your own heart and really listening to your own emotional body. Because if we're turned off and numb in our own emotional bodies, there's no way we can connect with our beloved or partner's emotional body. So that's the first part of like, okay, how have I gotten to this point? How do I need to take care of my own needs and feelings? And then the second question is asking your partner, how are you feeling? Can ask, I'm noticing you're feeling a little tender. Is this true for you? And that inquiry into their emotional state will open up oftentimes a conversation where you can really hear how your partner is doing. Because oftentimes they have their own stuff that's going on, which is much different than your personal work.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, what you're saying is it's really, it comes down to communication skills. I mean, what
yes.
you're saying, I'm not trying to minimize anything you're saying, by the way, because to me, everything is communication, verbal or nonverbal. So it's kind of like people really need to open their mouths and start to talk.
Mm-hmm. And a great tool for that is the nonviolent communication tools,
mm-hmm.
which really helps us get into our emotional languaging, because oftentimes we don't have the language around our emotions.
Right. People don't even know. Many people don't even know what they're feeling. I once said to my father, he said, "I love you." And I said, "How do you know you love me?" Just point to the part of your body where you feel the love. And he pointed to his head.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Yeah.
So people don't know. So say something more about nonviolent communication. How can people find out about that? Is that something that you work with couples on?
It is. I do work with couples and clients on nonviolent communication skills. There's another offshoot of that is compassionate communication. And for the nonviolent communication, you can find it at nvc.org. There is a website. And if you check out, Marshall Rosenthal wrote a great book that outlines his approach to nonviolent communication. I love that it gets us back into our heart and that it is an amazing tool to be able to meet your partner and say, let's have a conversation, let's feel, and let's get back to empathy and balance our head and our hearts. Because sometimes when we're in our own story, we get so lost in our head. And I've seen clients where most of the conflict is head to head, like, you know, the image of a bull, two bulls knocking heads.
Mm-hmm.
When we can drop down into our heart that's tempered by the head, then we have a more balanced palate to be able to work from.
It's great what you say, really, really great. So that would be the goal, to drop into the heart and balance the body with the head. How about eye gazing? Do you have people do eye gazing?
Yes, eye gazing is a wonderful technique for dropping in and becoming present with the person who is before you. Oftentimes we have masks that we wear, and eye gazing is a great technique.
What about the conversation, "I feel like I gave you my power and I'm taking it back"? I mean, what about just going straight for the word? What are your feelings about that, Chris Ellen?
Well, in my experience, reclaiming our own empowerment is an internal job. When we give our power to somebody else, oftentimes we're not getting, in my experience, oftentimes we're not getting our needs met. For example, oftentimes I have seen people when they have a need for companionship and they're reaching out for another person to fill that need. Instead of coming from an empowered I place, their own power of, "I have this amazing vulnerable need and I'm empowered to ask for that," their power is outside of themselves. So what happens when the conversation is like, "I have had a relationship and my power is outside of myself," coming back into your center of, "This is my power. Beloved, I have noticed that I have been disempowering myself by sharing this part of myself with you. And I am really ready to be fully empowered. So let's renegotiate our relationship. Let's have that conversation of what it can look like as my empowerment comes from myself and loving you from a non-disempowered place."
Really great. And I like that you choose to use the word "beloved" when you're speaking with the other person, the partner, instead of, I don't know, nickname, honey, baby, sweetie, cookie. I love the image of "beloved" because it's so high. You know, it elevates the relationship to a higher realm in which to speak. I always say to people when they're studying Tantra that if they start to regard themselves as gods and goddesses, if they're having a fight, you know, if I'm having a fight with God, that's a different fight than if I'm having a fight with somebody I regard as a dog. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I love the whole idea of calling each other beloved. It's equal to man can be beloved and woman can be beloved.
Yeah, definitely.
There's no gender dumbing down. Like, I never liked the idea that bachelors are bachelors, and then women were called bachelorettes. Like in French, et means smaller and less than. So I always liked the idea of one word that describes both.
Right.
I love it. It's a wonderful word, yeah. Mm-hmm. One of us cut each other off there. There's something else you were going to say.
I was just going to circle it back to empowerment, and that beloved concept is mutually empowering, especially if you're in a conflict, especially if there is that challenge in your relationship. It comes back to that neutral space and reminding each other of that love that you have for each other.
Yeah, it's good. Let's talk about your work for a minute in the last few moments that we have. You work with couples, and do you work with them in person, or do you work with them via Skype? Tell us about that so people know and how they can get in touch with you.
I work primarily via Skype and phone. When I am in the physical location of the couples that I am coaching, I am happy to do personal couples work. But Skype really gives us a way to connect around the globe, and I'm really honored to connect with dedicated couples who are challenged with their sex lives, challenged with differences in power and sexuality. There's something not flowing well, and so I am here to share tips and solutions that will reunite couples that works for both of them, because this is about empowering both people within the relationship.
Mm-hmm. That's great. It's really great that you're doing that, and I'm hoping that people who are having these kind of challenges will get in touch with you. Skype is so easy. All you have to, it's a free download on your computer. It blows my mind when I say, okay, what's your Skype? And they go, Skype? What's that?
Yeah.
I've been using Skype for so long, and even doing these interviews on Skype. How can people get in touch with you? What's the best way? Through your website, through a phone number, or through your Skype name? How do you prefer us?
The best way to get in touch with me is to check out my website, which is www.coupleslibidosolutions.com. And that will have all the information for my contact and how to start the initial consultation for working with me.
That's great. Chris Ellen, thank you so much for being my guest today and shedding some light on how people could take care of themselves and communicate what they need to another and shift things from an empathic point of view. It's necessary and needed and timely. So thanks for the work you're doing in the world.
Thank you, Lori. Great to be here.
Well, everybody, I'm going to sign off for Sex and Happiness today. My guest next time is quite controversial. She'll be talking about her show, which has recently come onto the alternative channels, and the show is called Polyamory, Married and Dating. One of the characters in the show, but it's real life. She's not acting. So she's going to be talking about how they got the show, what's happening on the show, and what's happening in her life and the lives of the people that she's living with as they explore their experience with marriage and dating. So please tune in next time. You will definitely be at the edge of your chair, I think, when you hear some of these things having to do with the challenges that they're facing. So come back to Sex and Happiness next time.
Thank you for joining us today for Sex and Happiness. To learn more about Lori and her work, please go to butterflyworkshops.com or follow her on Twitter or Facebook. You can send her an email at sexandhappiness@gmail.com. And if you'd like to listen to podcasts of Lori's previous show, Tantra Cafe, please go to tantracafe.com. We'll see you again right here next week for another edition of Sex and Happiness. Want you to make-